Thank you. May be seated. Thank you, choir. Wow. Tell you, they're a hard act to follow. I'll tell you that right now. Well, we're ending our series on temptation today. And as you know, the 8 o'clock crew had a curveball thrown at them. Last week, we went from the first temptation to the third temptation. So today we're going to the second temptation. So this is the new math that you've heard about. All right. So our verses, I hope he has it up on the screen, is the fourth chapter of Matthew, and it's 5-7. Do you have it? Yeah. Okay. Then the devil took him to the holy city and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. And did you remember last week I told you how high that is? Do you remember? That's right, 450 feet. If you are the Son of God, he said, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and they will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. Jesus answered him, it is also written, do not put the Lord your God to the test. God's holy word to us this morning. There is in Manchester an art gallery, and there's a painting there by Spencer Stanhope, and it's entitled Eve. And in the painting, the serpent is whispering in Eve's ear, and it's obvious she is very interested. And at the same time, one of the branches of the apple tree is bending low, heavy with fruit. So at the very moment she is thinking about it, a ripe red apple falls into her open hand. And there is the inward desire and the outward opportunity combined, and they're too much for her. And paradise is lost. When I first saw the painting, took some group over there to England, and I first saw the painting, I mean, I actually spent quite a bit of time looking at it and realizing there is a lot of helpful symbolism here. And of course, I've been thinking a lot about temptation lately because of the series that we're in. I mean, here is the first book of the Bible. You know, in the Old Testament, beginning with the story of the greatness and the goodness of God, the God who creates us, the God who created man and woman and placed them in a garden, a paradise, and then immediately the story of temptation. And I was so struck by the fact that the Gospels begin in a very similar way. I never really thought about it that much. But the Gospels begin with the story of the coming of Jesus, then with the baptism of Jesus, in which God is confirming Jesus and calling him into his life as Messiah, as Lord, as Christ. And the story of his baptism, so powerfully and beautiful, is the immediate following of what Jesus is doing, and then right after his baptism is the temptation of Jesus. The business of temptation, being lured, being invited, being attracted by something that leads us away from God, away from the center. And it's very important for us to think about it, because our relationship with God is what determines who we are, how we become who we have been uniquely created to be. And today we focus on the second temptation. So in the second temptation, the devil seems to be saying to Jesus, God's on your side. He wouldn't let anything physical happen to you. So go ahead. Go ahead and prove how much faith you have in him. Throw yourself down from this high place. Surely the Father is going to protect you. And how often we give in to this kind of temptation. How often we make our trust in God conditional. subject to good health and a good fortune. Our trust in God's goodness and mercy must be unconditional. And Jesus is not about to identify the success of his ministry with any notion of being sheltered from physical hurt. He will face whatever awaits him. He will not force his Father's hand. He will trust, he will believe, even if it means accepting the agony of the cross. And so Jesus answered, "You must not put the Lord your God to the test." Jesus resisted the temptation. And so in our life, this is also really important for us to talk about, because God is the source of our life. The God who loves us so much, who is loving you right now, this moment. And you kind of take a deep breath and you feel it and you know it in your mind and in your heart and in your body. I mean, this is the source of healing in our bodies. This loving presence of God. To know this now and to realize how the problem of temptation plagues all of us. Because in spite of our best intentions, in spite of what seems to be so obvious, I mean, the Garden of Eden is obviously the best place to be in covenant with God, who has just called us his beloved son and his beloved daughter. This is the place to be, and yet there's temptation immediately trying to lure us away. Eve succumbed to temptation, and paradise was lost. It was lost for her, and in a sense, it was lost for the human race, if we understand the symbolism here. Jesus did not succumb to temptation, and he began his public ministry immediately, fulfilling his call that had come to him to be the Messiah, to be God's Son, to be the one who reveals and brings God to us, and ultimately dies so that we can be restored to God. That's the difference. Dryden, the poet, has two lines that I have thought about at times in my life. Dare to be great without a guilty crown. I mean, live your life. Live fully, free of guilt. Dare to be great without a guilty crown. View it and lay the bright temptation down. That's a wonderful phrase. Lay the bright temptation down. Be rid of it. Be true to your call, the call of your baptism, the call of your life with God. Remain in that place where you experience the wholeness and the healing that comes from God for you. But how do we do this? How do we do this? Temptation is just, it's part of all of our lives. The Greek word actually means anything that lures us, that pulls us, that attracts us away from God, away from the source of life. And I think there are two things that are so important for us to talk about as I reflect on this. One is an awareness, a sensitivity to the presence of temptation in our lives, to the fact that it's all around us. Sometimes it is something so direct and obvious. I mean, I love the story. It's like the little girl who was in her Sunday school class and they were talking about temptation. And she says, it's not the temptation that's the problem. It's the candy. Yeah, it's the candy. Sometimes it's so obvious and so direct. But usually, it's more subtle. And that's the problem. Temptation doesn't come openly. It comes in subtle forms. It's often disguised as good. Dr. Helmut Tillich, the great German minister, tells the story of a Punch and Judy show. Remember those for kids and puppets and everything? And the kids were all caught up in this puppet show, and the hall was jammed with all these kids. And the story was the role of the devil. And it was beautifully depicted. I mean, it was a red puppet and it had a rough sounding voice. And he tells the kids, don't brush your teeth. Stick your tongue out at your teacher. You know, put a banana peel down so people can slip on it. Don't eat the food your parents want you to eat. And Dr. Tillich said it had an amazing result. As a result of this, the children began to brush their teeth. They started to eat the food that they were supposed to eat. They started to obey in school. You see, the devil had made a big mistake of tempting the kids openly and directly, and that doesn't work normally. That doesn't work. It comes disguised as good. We say something. You know, I'm doing this for the sake of my children. I'm telling you this for your own good. A bigger car is more cheaper in the long run. I think I used that one time. Everybody deserves a chance to relax now and then. They want to be with their own kind. These and other subtle forms of temptation come to us, and before we know it, we've been lured away from the center of truth and beauty and honesty and goodness and love. We have been tempted away. Oh, I enjoy so much the story of the minister and his wife. They were having some financial problems, and she liked to go shopping. She loved shopping. And he asked her, please don't go shopping for a while until, you know, we get some money in the bank. Well, she went shopping. And she came back home with a beautiful new dress. And he was upset. He said, I thought I told you not to go shopping, and especially not to buy an expensive dress like that. She said, well, the devil told me to do it. And he said, well, why didn't you tell the devil, get thee behind me, Satan? She said, I did. And he said, it looked good from back there, too. Well, the subtle temptation that comes to us to look good in that dress, or to eat this or that, or to go to this movie, even if it's on the shady side a little bit, a subtle temptation, and we need to be sensitive. We need to ask God to sensitize us to our true motive, because oftentimes the temptation comes from deep within us, as well as from outside, as in the case of Eve. You know, there's that inner thing that's going on, and we're talking to ourselves, and really we're in dialogue with evil, actually. And you know, did God say that you won't be good for you, that you won't die? The devil told Eve, you know, don't believe God. And then there's that apple in her hand. So we just, during this Lent, let's try to discern the things that are God's, to discern within ourselves the things that are leading us away and tempting us. I think it's really interesting that St. Augustine and other great spiritual figures throughout history have all said that the closer they come to God, the more sensitive they become. By that, I mean the more aware they become of evil that's around them. And I wonder if this isn't for two reasons. That when we get closer to God, and I bet you this happened to you maybe, when we get closer to God, I truly believe the devil steps up his attack on us. And so we're under attack. But I also think as we get closer and closer to God and open our lives to God, we are sensitized. We become aware of temptation where we weren't aware of it before. And we find ourselves wandering away, suddenly aware of what's going on. Things that didn't bother us before Suddenly we become aware of them and we learn to be sensitive to evil. This was really the important part of John and Charles Wesley, you know, the ministers who founded the Methodist movement. And it appears in many of their beautiful hymns. They wrote literally hundreds of hymns. But one of the best known and the most familiar talks about this quite beautifully. I want a principle within of watchful godly fear, a sensibility of sin, a pain to feel it near. Almighty God of truth and love, to me thy power impart. The mountain from my soul remove, the hardness from my heart. Oh, may the least omission pain be a reawakened soul and drive me back to that blood again which makes the wounded whole. That's amazing to me. How aware Charles Wesley was in this hymn of the importance of being sensitive, having a sensibility of sin, a principle within to pain, to feel sin near, the first approach to be aware of it, and to catch the wandering eye, the wandering desire. But the most important thing of all is to ask God for the strength to resist. We're all going to find ourselves in situations where we know that if we give in, if we do this, if we eat this, if we act this way, if we buy this thing, we will be led away from our first love, from the source of life. And we need to ask God for strength to overcome. A little boy had a sore mouth, and somebody asked him what happened. He said, I ran into a hot marshmallow. And a man said, a hot marshmallow? He said, yes, I was eating one part, and I didn't know the other part was still on fire, he said. Well, that's happened to me. I mean, I'm eating on one part and finding the other part on fire, and by that time, I don't have the strength to resist the temptation. We get close to it. You know, we look at the apple. We smell the perfume. We touch the other person. We buy the new SUV. Whatever it might be, it may be nothing serious on the surface. But then we get burned. And we underestimate the power of temptation. I'm sure you remember Homer's Odyssey, probably from your school days. And there was an island of sirens, beautiful women with seductive voices who sang to the sailing ships as they went by, tempting the sailors. And the sailors was drawn toward them, and then their whole ship was destroyed on the rocks. And only twice did the ships make it safely past the island of sirens. It happened first when Ulysses filled the sailors' ears with wax so that they couldn't hear anything. And then he commanded them to tie him to the mast of the ship. And they made it past this island with great suffering and great pain. I also remember Mother Pollard, who came to Martin Luther King on one occasion when he was tempted to give it all up, literally. It was just too much for him, too much on his family. He was at the end of his resources, and Mother Pollard just told him that God was not going to let him down and that he needed to depend on God all the more when he was in that place of being tempted that way. That was wonderful advice from Mother Pollard. And Martin Luther King, of course, was able to throw himself on God more and more and to gain the strength he needed to carry on his ministry. And so we move more and more and more into that relationship with God. And there are times when it simply comes down to a matter of doing the right thing and depending upon God to help us do that right thing. Now, I said a moment ago that there were two ships that safely made it past the island of Sirens, and in the old Greek story. And the second occasion was when Jason and the Argonauts, having set out on that quest for the Golden Fleece, you might remember that one. And when they came near the island of the Sirens, they heard this irresistible music, this incredible temptation. But Orpheus saw what was happening, and he picked up his harp, he tuned it, he began to sing. And the music of Orpheus was more glorious than any music the sailors had ever heard before. It was so beautiful that the music of the sirens sounded discordant and repulsive. And so, listening intently to the music of the harp, the sailors guided the ship safely past the island of temptation. Every day of our lives, we pass 100 tempting siren islands. But God in Christ so fills our lives with music of grace, the power of grace, God's living, passionate presence, that we are given the strength to lay the bright temptation down.